Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Kevin Wooster joins us now for a little casting and conversation. You can find his blog, On the Other Hand, online at sdpb.org/Wooster. Kevin, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here. Just so you know, I'm partway to Angostura to do some fishing today.
Perfect.
And before the bad weather comes in for another week of bad weather. And I'm sitting here at a pullout at Hermosa looking across the ridge at Harney Peak. So eat your heart out.
Well, I'm told you bring the bad weather with you, so I don't know.
I'm sorry. Let me correct myself. Black Elk Peak.
Right.
Too many years of saying Harney. It's just trying to get it out of my head.
So,
Black Elk Peak.
So many times we talk about, you know, we've been talking a lot about recently Governor Noem's Nest Predator Bounty Program and,
yeah.
You know, habitat. And now this week is just the joy and the love of getting outside. And one of the folks that you get together with is all about both those things, sort of being part of the public policy conversation and really more about the South Dakota conversation of getting your feet wet. Tell us a little bit about John Cooper.
Well, and you know, I'm still midway through the Noem two-part series. Wingnut's visit, the political part of it, and then her visit with this Black Hills Sportsman. But I had gone out, I got the call from Cooper, and this is what I write about, a text actually from Cooper. And I had to take a break, you know, because sometimes you have to take a break from the political stuff and the conflict stuff and things. And this is a great way to do it. And John Cooper is a guy that I met in 79 when I was just starting out as an outdoor writer for the Argus Leader in Sioux Falls. And he was two to three states, I can't remember what, he was covering for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, an enforcement agent. And I covered some stories out in Pier with him. And somewhere along the line, he said he's also a very serious bass fisherman with California roots and very accomplished at that. And he took me bass fishing a couple of times for a story initially for the Argus, and then just, you know, that was almost 40 years ago, and I've been fishing with Cooper one way or the other ever since.
So tell us a little bit about, because now I'm, you know, interested in this journalism side of it too as well, of course. So being an outdoor reporter and then going bass fishing and then telling the story, like how did you sort of put all that together into what is a story about this that helps paint a bigger picture of what people need to know from a conservation standpoint, from a, you know, a cultural standpoint, what are you trying to get at as an outdoor reporter?
Well, you know, there's always a part of the thing with Cooper and with anybody that you cover. And I should stop and say that it's a complicated situation in South Dakota where you have a small base of people and you sometimes end up as neighbors or friends or church, you know, parishioners or school, you know, your kids go to the same school. So you end up knowing people as news sources often and as human beings. And part of that is because I took a break from news for a couple of years and ran an outdoor paper, and Cooper wrote for the outdoor paper. And when he was with the Fish and Wildlife Service, he wasn't such a political animal as he had to be when he went to work for Game Fish and Parks as secretary. So those things all got complicated. But the one thing that is never complicated with Cooper, and he can be a controversial guy over the years he was, but if you ever spend time in the outdoors with him, first of all, his knowledge base of the outdoors, how much he knows about the outdoors from you know, eared grebes to ferruginous hawks, and he's always stopping and talking about the behavior of those things, and is also noticing what's going on in ecosystems and watersheds and things like that. And so you hope that you bring to your writing, your coverage, a more traditional political outdoor natural resources coverage, but also these moments when you can get away and show people as human beings and the way that they actually interact personally with the resources that they try to protect or that, in my case, that I try to write about.
All right. Well, he's not afraid to make fun of your hat. So we know that about him. We know that about your relationship. That
he makes fun about many things because for a while I wrote a column called Backlash many years ago, and my reputation is, in fact, up on Lake Oahe, when there was a big storm blow up, they would get on the CBs back before they had cell phones and say, "Is Wooster at the ramp somewhere? Has somebody got Wooster in a boat? There's no explanation for this storm." and yes, he suggested that my hats, and sometimes I pick them because I know Cooper will
right.
talk about them, my hats all always are a conversational point with him. So, as they were in this case.
And this is your public service announcement to wear a hat and prevent skin cancer here in South Dakota. I'm rather fond of hats myself.
Keep your whole eyebrow, which I don't have on one side.
All right, tell us how the fish were biting that day. Tell us about the trip itself.
It was lousy. And that happened 4 or 5 days earlier. A fellow that fishes this Murdo Dam, where John Thune grew up fishing, and Thune, one of the things I'm trying to do is get on Murdo Dam with John Thune sometime and do some fishing and talking and bring a SDBB crew out and get that. But it's tough. But in this area, the fish were biting 4 or 5 days ago. Same old story. And Cooper had heard about that, and we were coming off a cold spell, and we thought, let's give it a try before the next cold spell comes in. But bass in particular, some fish are more weather dependent and some more barometric pressure dependent than others are. Trout are not so much. Bass are very much so. They get kind of sullen and surly and despondent in these certain weather situations, and it takes them a while to warm up. And so we fished for 4 or 5 hours to get 4 fish, all of which we returned. Cooper, trying to keep a bass to eat it around John Cooper is a no-win situation, because unless it's wounded, he won't let you keep a fish. And I don't want to keep one either, a bass. But so we've fished hard for only 4 bites. But we had a lot of time to talk and eat lunch, and he always brings a good lunch. That's part of the deal. He brings the tackle, he brings the lunch, he brings the boat, and I bring the bad weather. That's kind of a situation.
And the conversational headgear, yeah.
And conversational headgear and the world around us. You know, we're just delighting in the world around us with spring and the ducks and the grebes and the raptors overhead and the blackbirds and, warblers. If you aren't having fun while you're fishing and the fish aren't biting, you're just not paying attention to the world around you.
Yeah. You write about the birds and the red-winged blackbirds, and it reminded me, because this week was the law enforcement torch run for Special Olympics, and I did that one year. Uh-huh. You're running across the state, essentially, and I was with the GF&P guy. Now I can't remember his name right at this moment, but it was like seeing South Dakota for the first time, being out there on the road, just running, and those birds are in the ditches and flying. And I said, what are those birds called? And he said, which birds? I said, the blackbirds with the red wings. And he said, red-winged blackbirds. I said, well, that's convenient. So sometimes.
How about the blackbirds with the yellow heads? Oh, those are yellow heads.
Yeah, right. Oh. How we get our outdoor education is from the wise people before us, who are patient enough to tell us that a red-winged blackbird is, in fact.
Exactly. Sometimes it goes the other way. In the fall, when I point out my dad and say, what's all that red grass over there? He said, that's bluestem. Wait, how can it be red if it's bluestem? Wait till spring. You'll see the bluestem. It's fall. It's red.
And this is, when we talk about sustainability, and we talk about how our planet is changing, how our state is changing, when we talk about agriculture and it's really important, isn't it? Or how important do you think it is to really, you got to get out from behind your desk, you got to stand in the places that you're writing about, you got to stand in the places that you're making policy about, that you're talking about with your friends. You got to get out and experience real life sometimes.
You do. And one of the things over the time that I've been a reporter and tried, I always joke that they pay me to cover politics. I cover the outdoors because I want to, but I also get paid often. And it's one of those areas where you really have to do it, I think, to write about it very well. Yeah. I mean, I don't do politics, but I hope I write about it okay. I'm an observer. But you're a lot more effective if you're a participant, if you're engaged in it, if you're physically part of it at certain times. I think as an outdoors writer, as a natural resource reporter, I think it's really essential that you have to do it, whether that's backpacking or, horseback riding in the backcountry or fishing or hunting or, whatever you do, get out and touch it and feel it and smell it and see it.
Who's doing it really well right now? Those numbers have gone down as well. Journalists out covering that beat.
Oh, yeah. When I started with the Argus, that was my job. I could take off on a on a Monday and say, I'll be back on Thursday or Friday. I'm going out to the river. I'll have some weekend stories and something for Monday or Tuesday. And they'd say, okay. Yeah. And of course, that ended shortly. There was a time when they had a full-time outdoor writer in Rapid City Journal, one for Watertown. I guess Rick Hoffe was part-time, but he did a lot of it. And then I was full-time at the Argus, and there isn't a full-time writer, outdoor writer in South Dakota right now for a newspaper that I'm aware of. And I don't know of anybody filling the role that Tony Dean had for so many years as an outdoor broadcaster, TV and radio.
What's lost?
Oh, the perspective, the constituency building that goes on by people listening to the radio, to Tony, and hopefully reading me in the Argus or in the Journal, because I did stories there outdoors too and continue to. You know, people being aware of these things that matter to us and are the reason that many of us live in South Dakota, many of us love this place, and that it makes us who we are in so many ways. And telling those stories and looking at those issues maintains and builds a constituency for our ecosystems and our environment that are just essential to their future.
Mm-hmm. And also the people that aren't, the stories that aren't being told of the people who this is their livelihood, this is their tradition, they become invisible as well.
They can, definitely. Yeah. That agencies that often are assaulted and sometimes, you know, need to be criticized rightfully, are made up of people, in my experience, that care about the resources that they're trying to protect and manage deeply. And I think that's important that we tell those stories and tell the stories of the landowners who feel the same way and are doing so many good things. All of the people engaged with personal hands-on contact with fish and game, wildlife, plants, and other natural resources.
And some of those people just send you a text and then say, hey, let's go out and get on the water. And that's really a big part of what you write about, is this showing up for one another. When somebody sends you an invite, you check with the scheduler and then you arrive.
And Mary is flexible, especially when it's an old friend.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all, as I'm 67, Coop's a few years older, we have in our group, we spoke in this story about the people that we've lost, that we've been on the water with, that we've been in fields with, and that aren't there anymore, and how important it is when you have an opportunity to share time together that you take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah. Were you always like that, or are you appreciating that more now than you did, you know, when you were working in different environments?
Yeah, I think you're a little rushed before when you have kids and you're younger and trying to really be aggressive about your career, and that's demanding. I think you're always aware of it, how lucky you are to have those moments. But I think you become more and more aware of it. And maybe more than that, you want to express it as you get older.
Yeah. Kevin Wooster, you can find the blog at sdpb.org/Wooster. Lots of politics there, but this one's just a nice break to go fishing with a friend. Kevin, thank you so much, friend, for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure. See ya.